Lots of conversations, lots of so as we've explained, I think we've explained the process here. We'll turn it over to you for any kind of opening comments you'd like to make, 5 minutes or so, and why you're interested in serving on the Board of Regents. Then we will ask a series of questions from members of the council, and then turn it back to you at probably at about 45 minutes for any kind of closing comments you'd like to make.
Thank you.
So I'll turn it over to you, Mr. Reddy. Got the floor.
Do we need this? Is it on? Do you need it to be able to hear?
We record.
Yep, it's going on tape.
Is it okay now? It's working.
Yep.
Well, thank you very much for having me here today. My name is Robert Eddy, and as you can tell, I'm a candidate for Regent for the at-large seats. My background is that I am an electrical engineering graduate at the University of Minnesota. So I am a maroon and gold kind of guy. I know there are several other people around here that are, and several that hope to be. I think there's a couple of them here too. But I know the gentleman to my immediate right here is an alumnus also, so he and I are kind of compatriots in that, but there are a few others and so on too. I'm here because our university, and I tell people that when I speak about it, even though they say, well, I didn't go to school there, it's not my university, I tell them that if you live in the state of Minnesota and you are a citizen resident of the state of Minnesota, it's your university too. And I also call it my university because I went to school there. And I want it to be the best university that we could be. And I unabashedly say, bar none, when I say that. There are other people that have Big Ten school backgrounds or Ivy League school backgrounds or whatever that say, oh, we are the best. And I want to be able to look them straight in the eye and have that argument and win it. I think we probably have become lax a little bit in a few of those areas, which is why I'm here. If we were rated 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 in every rating system you could think of for institutions of higher learning, I might not necessarily be here. But we aren't. So I think I can lend some help to improve that. I've had some experience with the University of Minnesota already on a few things that I've done besides Regents Board meetings, which I always attend and sit in the back and watch for about the last 4 years I've been doing that. So I have a flavor for what they do there, but as you can see on my list in the second paragraph right there, I've spent both time and offered financial support in, besides, people always think about athletics as where people make donations to a major university, but also engineering and medical and the marching band for crying out loud and the athletic scholarships and facilities too. I think we're doing a number of things right at this university, and I have a list there that has a few of those in it. Graduation rates is an example, and student debt is another example that we're that we have a really good handle on already. The last one right there, you'll see that our ag school, or CFANS as it is called now, is rated extremely high. And my code system, by the way, if you look at those, is the first digit after the hyphen there is where we're ranked nationally. In the first set of parentheses is where we are in the Big Ten, and the second set of parentheses is who is number one. So, and that carries on down. I think a lot of these things that are in my first list right there, we just need to keep on doing. We have a good handle on those now, and we need to keep working on it. I think we have a few other things that we could use some work on. Our relationship with the legislature is one of them. Several of you that are in here know that. We have some college ranking areas that we could use some work on. The one we pride ourselves a lot with our medical school at this university. It's ranked 46th in the nation. I think that could use some work. Last, we have some infrastructure work that needs to be done at this university. And we quite frankly have one of the buildings on that list is unusable, uninhabitable right now. And it's on the National Register of Historic Places, and you can't even get in the door. So that's why I'm here. And I would certainly entertain questions.
Thank you very much. I'll start. The first question is about the University of Minnesota's land grant mission. The University of Minnesota is our state's land grant university.
Yes.
What does that mean to you, and what do you think it should mean to the people of Minnesota?
I think what it means is, or it should mean, is that we have several missions that are some required missions, we have a few curricula that I believe are required, and I certainly don't have that right in front of me, but I believe it's agriculture, I believe it's engineering, I believe it's liberal arts, and maybe a couple of others. We have some other varied requirements. We have an ROTC requirement, as an example, because of a land grant institution. But it also connotes, I think, some heavy emphasis on research that we should be doing also. And we do a lot of research in some of the technical professions. We do a lot of research in medical, both some of the cancer research and some a Little High Heart Institute for the cardiovascular research. Some of those are quite interrelated. The people over at engineering are going to, I'll put in a plug right here. I'm an engineer, and I think that although our cardiovascular people at Little High Heart Institute will probably come up with a cure for some aspects of heart disease in the relatively near future, I think it's an engineer that's going to come up with a cure for some of the cancer diseases that we have. And it's going to be because some of the nanotechnology research that they're doing over there. So research is important.
Thank you. Councilmember Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, by way of full disclosure, Mr. Eddy and I are well known. We traveled to Gopher games together, and he's an ardent fan. He's, I must say, I'm in awe of his contributions to the University of Minnesota. He's very, very modest. Perhaps there's another candidate here that's been in that category, but Bob's contributions to the university across the board are enormous. He's too modest to say what the total. I can say this, there's a number that all of you that are Gopher sports fans, and I associate him most with the sports side, but he's across the board. And he probably spends more time on behalf of the university in many ways than some regions do. But there's a numerical number. If you're a Gopher ticket buyer, you get a rank, you get a number. I'm up in the thousands. Bob Eddy is number one. Thank you, Bob.
I can brag for a month at least, because they publish them 30 days at a time, that I'm number one.
Can I just follow up? Please tell us what the number is, because that was going to be my question, Jim.
The number, for which number?
What you've contributed to the stadium, and I don't mean that that's where the university starts and stops. In full disclosure, we've just passed each other through the years. I did not understand who you were till I read your application, and then I went online and Googled you, and I thought, oh my gosh. So my question's two-part. What have you done that you are most proud of about what you've done for the University of Minnesota, and then what was your contribution to making the stadium possible?
The first one, I'll answer in two parts, if I might, because I've got half of that done already and half of it that I'm working on right now. And the first half of that was I endowed a chair. Neither of these are going to be athletic, by the way. I endowed a chair for cardiopulmonary resuscitation research and the gentleman who sits in that chair is a Dr. Yiannopoulos, Dimitri Yiannopoulos, over at the Department of Medicine, and they are working on better methodology for cardiopulmonary resuscitation, because that is the number one killer of people in the United States. You are most likely to die from that as anything else in the country. I'll give you a few stats. There are about 400 people per year in the Minneapolis-St. Paul metropolitan area that suffer cardiac arrest. And when I say that, I mean out. Not just grabbing your chest and saying it hurts. You are dead. We always were taught and were always heard that if you can get to someone like that in the first 2 minutes and start CPR on them, the old traditional thing, you know, talk like this and breathing and everything, you had about a 5 or 6 or 7% chance of recovery. These folks over there now, they can get to you in the first 45 minutes and get you into a cath lab with all the new techniques they have, you probably have closer to a 50% chance of survival. It's amazing the difference. And we have another. Should I tell them about the other project I'm working on here? I'm working with a project to develop a mobile cath lab so we can take this show on the road, specifically to outstate Minnesota rural areas. It was made possible by a grant from the Helmsley Foundation in New York. I don't have this on here because they don't care if you talk about it, but they don't want it in print yet until this thing is ready to go. So we're building a very large vehicle, double size ambulance. They called it the super ambulance in the article that was in the Foundations magazine. To be able to take this cath lab technology sooner or later to get it in outstate areas, because it's only available in a few hospitals in the state of Minnesota. So Dr. Yiannopoulos is the one, along with his team, developing these techniques. We're going to build this vehicle. We're going to get it on the road. We're going to save a bunch of lives. It's going to be maroon with a huge gold M on the side of it. And I'm hoping it'll have a bunch of little gold heart stickers on the back doors for everybody that we save with that thing. So that's the one I've done already. The one that I haven't done yet that I would be most proud of is I want to also, I've been talking to engineering about this, endowing a chair in electrical engineering that is going to be involved with the nanotechnology research that is specifically a cancer treatment methodology, both from the standpoint of being able to deliver a pharmaceutical in a nanotechnology way, but also they have developed ways of literally gravitating these nanowires to a cancer cell rather than a healthy cell and destroying the nucleus in a cancer cell so it will die and won't reproduce. I think my engineering guys are going to cure cancer. That answer your question? Well, excuse me, and how much?
To the stadium.
To the stadium, I don't have very much to the stadium because that was done before I got here. Do you want my total?
You don't have, no.
You don't have to, no.
You don't have to.
She okay. can be a little.
They think I asked two pointed questions.
We'll go to the.
It's above six.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay, Councilmember Hipsch, you're next in order.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. And thank you so much for your commitment to the University of Minnesota and for everything you've given back. The University of Minnesota is a collection of a number of system campuses.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about your experience on those campuses outside of the Twin Cities and how you might go about getting to be even more familiar with them if you would be chosen as a regent?
Well, first, I'd like to go to all of them. I think there's a few ways that a regent gets to do that besides going on the tour. They get to go during graduations at those schools, those campuses, commencement exercise. That'd be fun to do. I'd like to do that. Be interesting to do that. It's, as I said, always good to go on the tour and find out what they're doing there new today. It's interesting to go to athletic events there because they all have their teams too. So there are various different ways I think that you can go learn about those campuses. One good way is to go and sit in on a class, or more than one class, but go and sit in on one. I kind of prefer the back row when I go and sit and stuff like that so that somebody doesn't necessarily always know who you are, but to just watch.
Vice Chair Taylor.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Bob, again for being here. You are an electrical engineering graduate. I really appreciated some of the focus areas in which you have an interest. I'm looking at engineering, your home college, and was a little bit surprised to see its ranking, in my mind, as low as it is. We've had a lot of talk around this table, now on our fourth day, about the law school and the medical school, but this is the first time, in my mind, to be talking about engineering in a do-better sense. Our current president, Eric Kaler, is, as you, a graduate of IT. What conversations would you have as a regent if you were successful with our new president to address an issue with your home college?
I think it's the same answer I would have for medicine, for the starters. For both of those schools, we've had three deans in 4 years, I believe. Our continuity is pretty bad. And I think that's the first place to start, because they just can't get the ball rolling on whatever their idea is and their process is and their focus to move that school up when they're only there a year. And it's a fundraising question, it's a faculty question, it's a student involvement question, and all of those things. But you can't do it a year at a time. Piecemeal.
Thank you.
Councilmember Menon.
Thank you. I have a standard question that I usually ask, but just because of your intro and your focus on the issue of improving our standards as a university and making us more elite in our rankings, I want to ask a question about accessibility. Sorry.
That's a PJ Fleck word, elite.
Oh, yeah.
He's rowing the boat.
I wanted to ask a question about accessibility because you also did mention in your intro statement that this is a school for all Minnesotans. So how do you balance
love this pen.
You know, raising our standards while also dealing with the fact that it's becoming more difficult for non-white students and students from outstate Minnesota to gain access into our institution?
I think, and I think I would have an argument with the current president about this, so I'll leave it at that, that it has to start before they get there. This is a high school question, or maybe even then junior high school question. I'll give you my personal experience as to way to not do it. When I first got the University of Minnesota, as I applied and got accepted and so forth, I found out that I had to take a zero credit calculus class over the summer before I got into IT. I went to school at IT, not CSE, because it was Institute of Technology then, because I didn't have a calculus class in my little tiny small high school of 43 in the graduating class. And if you extrapolate that, I think you get to the answer, is that they have to be better prepared as high school and even junior high school to be able to meet those standards. I mean, we can always lower the standards and then everybody can get in, but I don't think that's the answer. I think it's to keep the standards high and prepare people to get in to meet those standards to be able to get accepted. And so that doesn't mean we just, as the University of Minnesota, look at the high school system and say, you guys get yourself squared away and give us a call when you get done with that. It might be incumbent upon the University of Minnesota to provide some outreach to the school system to help with that.
Thank you.
Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Eddy, you provided some data. I kind of get the idea you're kind of a data-driven decision maker. And I appreciate getting that because I'm kind of that way myself. You had things that we're doing right is equalizing state tuition or out-of-state tuition. I'd kind of like to follow up with that a little bit. One of the things here at the University of Minnesota, we're one of 13 states in the nation that has a net out-migration of college-age students. In other words, we have more students leaving the state than coming to us from other states for higher education. And it's about 7,000 to 7,500 students annually. Of the students coming to us from various states, we know that 30% will stay in Minnesota. We have no idea about the students that leave us who are Minnesota natives. We're trying to get that data so we can help understand this migration issue. One of the issues that's been discussed at the Regents over the last few years is this whole idea about out-state tuition, out-of-state student tuition. It's been one of the lowest in the Big Ten. Part of that was to attract more students to make up the deficit, perhaps, that we're having. And as you raise the bar for students, you kind of shut out a lot of students when you've got 28 ACT requirement and raising your academic standards. Last night, we had the annual chamber dinner that legislators are invited to. Some of you in the room might have been there. It's, about 900 people. It's huge. And the leaders of the legislature, the governor, all speak. And Doug Loon, who's the president of the chamber, made the comment, we need to keep Minnesota students in Minnesota. So obviously the chamber is aware of this issue. My question is, how do we keep Minnesota students at the University of Minnesota? How do we keep Minnesota students in Minnesota?
Make it better. I would offer you as an example, and I hate to say this because it's Michigan, another M, wrong color, but they have a saying in Michigan, honest to gosh, they have a saying at the University of Michigan, because they have the highest public school out-of-state tuition in the Big Ten. Northwestern, as you know, it's higher private school. And they will look you right in the eye and say, it costs a lot to be Michigan. So they're very proud of that. I don't necessarily think we have to be the highest one in the Big Ten. We were the lowest up until just recently, I've said before, I don't think this is an area where we would be too bashful to be average is as far as tuition goes. But I don't think that tuition is necessarily the big barrier once you get to be on a par with the ranking. If people perceive that the education isn't worth as much, they won't pay as much for it, or they'll go elsewhere. And if I was someone looking for a really good medical school education, as an example, would I go to the number 46 rated medical school in the country? Or if I was going to a Big Ten school because I said, that's where I want to go to a Big Ten school, would I go to, I'm just paging here to get the right number, would I go to the Mayo Clinic, who's rated number 6th in the country? Would I go to Michigan, who's rated 15th? Would I go to Northwestern, who's rated 20th? Would I go to Wisconsin, who's rated 20, and you're still 20 above us, all these are. Would I go to Wisconsin, boy, I hate the thought of it, who's rated 28, as you see where I'm coming from there, is all these schools are rated better, and people will pay for that higher rating. A certain amount, because it's because when they go looking for a job, that shows up on their resume also. So I think we have to control tuition, we have to watch tuition, but if we don't have a product to sell, people are going to go elsewhere to buy that product. I hate to say it, I really do. I hate to say it. I wish our medical school was had one less digit in its ranking, and it was 4th or 6th.
Council Member England.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Eddy, thank you for your interest in serving on the Board of Regents. I have a comment and then a question, and my comment is I just want to express gratitude for your support and especially your passion for the University of Minnesota. That really comes through, and it's really impressive, and you've sort of acted on that passion to further both the academic and the athletic side of the university. The state should be grateful for that. So thank you, just straight up, thank you for that. My question is this: so you strike me as a individual who is both passionate and results driven. You strike me as someone who identifies a problem and goes after it, and you've laid out some significant issues with rankings and other things where the university needs to focus and work on. Having said that, I'm sure you know that the University of Minnesota, like many universities, has a very complicated governance process, and it's maybe moves at a pace that's not comparable to a business decision-making process that you may be more familiar with. So my question to you is this: do you have the patience to serve a six-year term on the Board of Regents with your passion and your skill in identifying problems, but will you be patient for the process to kind of catch up to you? Because I think you're going to be out ahead.
Thank you. I think I, you know, obviously would have to be and can be. I've served on other boards before that move at slow paces also. And I think you have to draw a fine line between being patient enough to let the process do its thing and get through the process and not step over that line of just going with the flow, because then you've lost. If you just get to a point where you just go with the flow and follow along with what everybody else is doing, I don't think you're effective anymore. I think you're lost there. it wouldn't hurt any at all, of course, to lead and try and get a couple of other people that maybe have already crossed that line to get back on the right side of it. Thank you.
Councilmember Moore.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Candidate Eddy, for your time and obviously for your generosity to the U and all of your service. On your one-page handout, number five, you say promoting equity and diversity is something that the university is doing right. And we've heard some of the strides that the U is taking in terms of students on campus, staff, faculty, those things. In your opinion, what's the role of the university in building a more equitable state for people of color, understanding that we are near the top in terms of racial equity, some of the worst in the nation?
I think we've got a good start on this from the standpoint that there is a vice presidential level office for equity and diversity at the University of Minnesota, and there are 12 people in that office. And they do everything from taking complaints to providing information, conducting seminars, that sort of thing like that. I think you have to keep working at it. This can't be like the standard old joke about your plan that you've done for next year, that we're doing our strategic plan, we've got it done, we've got it in a book, and we approve it at the board level, and then say, good, and we shelve that. You can't do that just because we've got a start. You have to keep on working at it. I think you have to use the old management acronym of POEM, plan, organize, execute, and measure. And I've said to people, sometimes you need to take the measure part and put it up front and see where you are to start with. But I think you, and the plan is always to do those four things. And I'll use a phrase from our incoming president when she was at the Regents meeting, when someone asked her a question the other day about this, is rinse and repeat. So you have to do all those things and then measure what your success or not is and do it all over again. So I think the answer is it can't stop. It has to be ongoing. You can't just say, oh, we have a plan, good, we're done, pat ourselves on the back and say, great for us. Can't do that.
Councilmember Miltmore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Over here in right field, literally, if not metaphorically. Let me hasten, first of all, to thank you, as the others have, for your contributions. Very generous and kind of you. You touched on the subject of tuition, and much of the discussion this week has been about tuition and cost containment. And something that was intriguing in your written statement, you say the goal of tuition should be to develop a tuition system that is fair to all students, but taking into account the classes of students reflective of their resident status and college status, realizing that some colleges cost more to operate than others and that some generate more revenue than others. I'm just wondering if you'd care to comment on tuition in general, but maybe specifically your thoughts about that statement as well.
This one involves the legislature too. My example that I used on that is that if you laid out all of the 18, I guess there are colleges, did a spreadsheet on all of them and found out what their revenue is, what their expenses were, etc., for each one, and treated them all as business units, and then said, okay, some of them are deeply red. I don't think there are any of them that are black. Some of them are close, but liberal arts is an example. CLA is the largest college at the University of Minnesota, and it's would use a lot of red ink if you were to run that financial spreadsheet on them. And there are reasons that some of these schools are like that and some of them are not. If you look at the professional schools as an example, whether or not it's engineering or ag or Carlson School or medical or some of those, they generate more grants, they generate more business requests for research on their part that gets paid for. They generate more soft money from the standpoint of alumni that are able to and willing to contribute as compared to some of the other schools. So there's a lot of what you would call soft money available there that isn't available on some of the other colleges. And I quite frankly would be in favor of the idea of when you go to the legislature and say, and I'll look at a former one right here, and say, and there are a couple of existing ones right over here too, that rather than coming in and saying, we need this much money for tuition relief, is to be able to say, if you are, and I'll use liberal arts as an example, if you are going to have a liberal arts college at the University of Minnesota, and if you think that's important, it needs this much subsidy every year. Engineering maybe only needs this much, Carlson School maybe only needs this much, whatever. So that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about different colleges and different classes of students, is that they're in whatever college. And so there's different tuition relief, I think, that's necessary for different colleges and different aspects of the university just because of what they can generate on their own versus what they can't. So I think that's a real driver.
Councilmember Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Eddy, we've talked a lot about your commitment to the University of Minnesota, and very appreciative of that, as we all are. Can you talk about, just briefly, you've had a lot of experience on in really major roles on boards. If you could talk a little bit about that and the perspectives that would bring, and just kind of your professional experience in that way.
Thank you. I think the one that probably most parallels this as one called National Exchange Carrier Association, which you see in your materials there. It is almost exactly financially the same size as the University of Minnesota. It's when the University of Minnesota was $3.1 billion a year budget, this place was $3.1 billion a year budget too. I used to joke with our people on the board when I was chairing that board, when somebody would start getting wrapped around the axle about something that seemed kind of trivial, as at that point in time it took $101 a second to run the place. So if it was a $300 question, I would say, how long do you want to argue about this? So the parallels are there. That's one of them. Financially, you have a lot of money to deal with. Another one is the personnel involved. We didn't have anywhere near as many employees for that same $3.1 billion as the University of Minnesota does. But the parallels were that somewhat over half of our employees had doctorate degrees in computer science or math or economics or something like that. And they require, as would be faculty here at the University of Minnesota, require a little more schmoozing than your average employee does as to the way that you manage and lead them and so forth. I hate to say it, but the best way is to make them think it was their idea, whatever it is that you are trying to do. So, and we had a board of 12 people there that were from various different aspects of the telecommunications industry, and some not, because we had a federal requirement to have people that were not in the industry there too. So we had people with divergent opinions that you had to be able to get them all to a decision finally, sooner or later. So that's the one I point to that is, in some aspects, very similar to this.
Two more questions. Council Member Menon.
Thank you. Really important aspect of being on the Board of Regents, and as you know, we've faced a number of crises in the last few years as an institution. What are the most important aspects of crisis management to you, and how does that fit into making decisions as a collaborative body like the Board of Regents?
If you have a crisis that is, I'll grab one as an example, as the 10 football player incident of two years and 3 months ago, or whatever it was. I think you have to get out in front of it early and acknowledge it so that somebody knows, so you know it happened. I think you have to get the facts before somebody starts making statements that may turn out to be untrue later on. That particular one I used as an example because there are now pending lawsuits naming the University of Minnesota because it wasn't handled well. I think you have to acknowledge that it happened, but I think you also have to get everyone to, quite frankly, shut up until you can get the facts, because making statements when not everybody knows what really happened or what truly happened is not productive and leads to those kind of lawsuits, and as well as some defamation of personnel involved on either side of the issue. So I think you have to handle it in a methodical form.
Thank you.
So I lied before. We've got two questions now. Councilmember Moore.
Thank you, Chairman. As we've heard, you've been very successful, and it sounds like you're great at winning individuals over and bringing a group to a consensus decision. Can you tell us, how's your temperament when you're on the minority of a group decision, and how do you champion a decision that you don't agree with, and can you provide us an example?
You know, my temperament is kind of like this, like I've been here today most of the time. And I think that's from a lot of years of being on either the upside or the downside of a decision. And if you're on the downside of if you're on the upside of a decision, it's easy. If you're on the downside of a decision, to yourself privately, or maybe to the individual sitting next to you, that the two of you are on the same side, you can think to yourself or speak to them about, boy, that's the dumbest thing we've ever done. But when you champion a decision, okay, that whether or not you are on the upside or downside of that decision, again, whether or not it's the University of Minnesota Regents or whether or not it's the Board of Directors of the Boy Scouts that I was on up in St. Cloud, or, you know, your church or whatever it is, you make those decisions and act as a unit once you make them. So you have to be able to say, we, and I think that's the operative word there, we decided to do this, and carry on from there.
Can just follow up, can you provide an example where you've been in that position?
I'd really have to think. I'm sorry, I really have to think about that for a while before I could get to one. I might think of one before we get out of here, but I'm sorry about that, but I just...
Last one is Council Member Rogers, and we've got about 2 minutes. So.
Okay. And thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Eddy. Thank you for all of your contributions to the university. I'm a graduate of medical school, and I usually ask the medical questions. So you've answered virtually all of the things that I had as far as questions. The rankings, I'm impressed that you know where we stand with that. I might have one addition. If you break that down further, they actually do rank in the top 10 in primary care, but that's one specific area. Appreciate your also your interest in the athletics. So I have my first question is, why couldn't you make any free throws the other night?
You know, that's a really good question. I called up someone from the athletic department the next day, and I said, you know, I'm not a basketball coach, but the two things that Maryland did well is they out-rebounded us, and they they shot 89% from the line. That's NBA quality free throw shooting. They only missed one in the first half. So I don't know the answer to that, but it's certainly the right question. Okay, you made 15 points of difference.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. But my other question relates to the, you talked about tuition a little bit. But, you know, the budget, as you mentioned, of a $4 billion institution
close.
Here. And they've attempted to keep the tuition levels steady, at least. And if you need to balance that budget, what other ways are there to balance that budget other than what the tuition the students pay?
And there's always cost reduction. That's the other flip side of anything like that. And you're going to get my business background answer here to that one, is that I don't think the question should be when we go from 2018 to 2019 or 2018 to 2020 is why our budget is $3.8 billion this year and $3.9 billion next year and $4 billion next year. I think the question should be, why isn't it $3.8 billion this year and $3.7 billion next year? And I think there are ways to do that. The legislature has been suspicious for quite some time that there is a lot of administrative costs to be had in the University of Minnesota budget as far as cost reduction. I think some of those come from the prior administration before President Kaler. He was tasked with a $90 million reduction in administrative costs when he got that job. I quite frankly think that's the wrong question to ask of him. Not can you reduce $90 million in administrative costs, can you reduce $90 million of costs? End the sentence there, period. Find ways to do that and compensate him and other people that work for him for doing that. I'm a big believer in incentive pay and whether or not it's for financial reasons, for graduation rates, for APR in the athletic department, for average GPA when you graduate, for student loan totals when you graduate. All of those are good measurables. Back to Pullum again for Mr. Moore over here. And therefore can be compensated for. And the great thing about doing that, if you compensate your executives for doing that, when you have a financial one in there, is that it's found money. Because if you compensate, if you compensate the University of Minnesota president $500,000 for saving $100 million in the budget, you ought to do that a lot.
Thank you.
Mr. Eddy, that brings us to the end of our questions. Thank you very much. Do you have any closing comments or closing statement?
I think I've probably taken up 4 minutes more of your time.
Run over a little bit. But hey,
my allocation was.
Great discussion.
So I will, I think you have one more, so I will leave.
Two more. But thank you very much. We appreciate it.